Hello and welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, the Miami Herald's Miami Hurricanes podcast. I am David Wilson and I am joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller Degnan, our Hurricanes beat writer here at the Herald. Susan, how are you?
I'm good generally, but very sad with the news that we got tonight that Larry Wall, former longtime spokesman, media icon, as they say, died tonight. The outpouring from Miami Hurricanes fans, because he worked for Miami for many years, and the Orange Bowl, that's where he was, and everything from the New York Yankees to ABC to the whole country. I mean, we're hearing from people that are very upset.
Yeah, we are recording this. It is Wednesday night. Larry Wall, who'd been sick for a little while, obviously things took a turn for the worse, and he passed away.
We're going to do a little bit of a spring preview in the second half of this episode, but we wanted to start off by talking a little bit about Larry. And to do that, we wanted to bring on a guest this week. It's Cameron Gorby, the Assistant Athletic Director for Communications at the University of Miami. Cam, how are you?
I'm doing as well as I can be, I guess, David. Susan's obit was, I think, a tremendous tribute to a guy who meant so much to so many of us. So with that said, obviously a really tough night for the University of Miami community. But, you know, when Susan asked if, you know, I could hop on tonight, it was sort of a no-brainer because of just how much Larry Wall meant to this community and how much Larry Wall means to our Hurricanes athletics department. It is just an inconceivable amount, really.
And, you know, and Cam, for someone who's, you know, supposedly in the background, kind of, you know, not in the center of the news itself, isn't it just amazing how much love is being poured out? I just can't throughout the, you know, you don't, like, everybody loved Larry Wall, but he wasn't in the center of everything. He was kind of on the outside of it. I don't know how you describe it, but
I think it's a very astute observation. It just kind of goes to show you what kind of person Larry was. You know, our job, you know, communications, PR, media relations field, it obviously for a long time has been known as sports information. We're sort of connectors, right? We connect writers and radio personalities and TV hosts with student athletes and coaches and you know, sort of the gatekeepers of a lot of those relationships. And so when someone, to your point, Susan, who is so behind the scenes, to see the outpouring of support and the outpouring of love and emotion and passion for Larry, it just goes to show you, if you make that sort of mark on people in your capacity, it is a testament, I think, the response that to the news about what kind of person Larry was and just how much he meant to so many people.
And for you, Cam, how... you know what? I mean, you're obviously, Larry was 67. You're a lot younger than that. What can you learn from him? Or obviously, you were friends with him too. What did you learn from him? And you know, how can he be a role model? Kind of.
Totally. I think what made Larry so special was his ability to maintain relationships with various groups, whether, you know, obviously various people. A lot of times whose interests are not necessarily perfectly aligned. It's really hard to manage the credibility of the New York Yankees ownership and players and coaching staff, and also look out for the best interests of the beat writers and news teams who cover the Yankees. A lot of times those things are not going to be exactly along the same lines. And obviously, Larry started, you know, did it with the Yankees, was with the University of Miami for a long time, and, you know, had been with the Orange Bowl since, you know, early 2000s. And for everyone to feel similarly about Larry, whether that's a reporter, whether that's a colleague, whether that's a former player, a coach, Susan in your obit for the Herald, which was wonderful, you know, Dennis Erickson and Jimmy Johnson gave some wonderful tributes to him. I think it just goes to show that if you are able to successfully maintain all of those relationships when there's so much scrutiny and so many, you know, kind of different different cards at the table. It is really, really impressive, and it's really a testament to him. And I think that that's what I take with me the most. If you've been to a Miami Hurricanes press box in the past, you know, 7-8 years, Larry Wall has been sitting behind me, busting my chops for 4 straight quarters, whether the Hurricanes were winning or losing, which is was quite honestly one of my favorite parts of game day. And that is no exaggeration. He was the most special person in that regard, because you knew that he had been in your shoes, and his lightheartedness, his affability, his ability to relate to people was just unparalleled. And I think that, as I move forward in my career, that's sort of the type of person that I, model myself after, was an ability to maintain relationships with a lot of different people in a way that, you know, no matter what, those people knew that and know that I have their back and that I'm going to do my best on their behalf. And that's what Larry Wall was to so many people.
And that you could, be trusted, you know, by all those people, that you could still, you know, Larry said that you had to treat the media, you know, you had to be honest.
Absolutely. And I think that, like I said, when you're working for, you know, the University of Miami, obviously, especially the football program is treated like a pro sports team in this marketplace, right? The passion of the fan base, the eagerness of our fan base, and the expectations and the media coverage that comes along with it. You know, there aren't many college football programs in America, maybe none, who operate in a major media marketplace who command the same level of attention and eyeballs and clicks and viewership and all that. And so, that's why that's even more paramount. And for him to have been able to build that level of trust amongst players, amongst coaches, amongst media members, it really is a tribute to his legacy and the professional side of things. Forget the personal side of things, where he's just the best person you could ever meet, a guy who put a smile on every single person's face. From a professional aspect, he was the tops because of that exact reason that you said, Susan, that his ability to gain the trust of others and to put his trust in others was unparalleled. And for that, you know, that's why we're seeing the type of outpouring of support we're seeing tonight.
Yeah. And he kind of jumped from circus to circus. When you start with the George Steinbrenner Yankees and end up with the 1980s Miami Hurricanes, like, that's a lot of, like you said, a lot of media attention to deal with and a lot of characters to deal with that he dealt
definitely
with in his career.
There's no doubt. And I think that, New York Yankees baseball, you know, I don't know the Miami Hurricanes as a comparison, but I can't imagine what that must be like, managing the media presence of the New York Yankees on an everyday basis. I mean, talk about like a global level entity there. And for Larry to be the point person in that operation, I'm sure there were some days that were tough, and I'm sure there were some, there were plenty of awesome days too, but his level-headedness, his constant smile, you showed up on a Saturday and you would have no idea if Larry Wall had just had a tough week or a great day or a bad day, because Larry Wall was the same person every day. So you just as much assumed that he was having a great day because he made everyone else's lives around him better. And, that press box will never be the same without him. I'm dreading that too. First game without him.
Me too. Him just kind of quietly sitting there with a smile on his face. He loved the Hurricanes. Watching those games, obviously the Orange Bowl. And by the way, he didn't just bust your chops.
Everyone's chop. I know he busted yours plenty. I was usually sitting in the row between you and him. So the quips, I can only hope to have as many inspired quips as Larry did, because he was the master of the one-liner. He could deliver them like none other.
And the thing is, the George, David, you're talking about, and Cam, you were talking about George Steinbrenner. I mean, Steinbrenner called him up, I think first, or definitely one of the first phone calls after Thurman Munson was killed in the plane crash. And he was very young at that point. I think he was like 26 years old, and was totally put his trust in Larry Wall when he was this pretty young kid. And then Larry Wall still said that, would joke, I don't think he was joking, that Steinbrenner fired him, who was famous for firing people and
right.
them, even coaches, right? that Steinbrenner had fired him several times. And then the next day, Larry would get a call saying, where are you?
Right. And I think that that's exactly it. You know, you kind of, you get these sense around people, and you both, Susan and David, both can attest to it. When you're around certain people, you sort of just can pick up a different vibe when it comes to authenticity, when it comes to compassion, when it comes to relatability, and a lot of those things, you know, you can fake, you know, to some degree, but there's a level there where you really, you pass the point of no return. And with Larry, it was just so clear cut what kind of person he was that, you know, to read that story that you wrote about, Susan, about the tragic Thurman Munson plane crash, and for, you know, for the Steinbrenner family to put a lot of their trust in Larry to be the conduit to that whole process unfolding. It's unsurprising, again, because, you know, the first time you meet him, you feel like you've known him your whole life. And, you know, there's, I don't know that there are many people who's, you know, can unequivocally brighten the day of every single person around them 100% of the time. And I'm sure, not exaggerating when I say that. When you saw him, you couldn't help but at least smile. You know, even if you're running, you know, you had a, you know, Susan, you've been on deadline and you're running downstairs to get quotes for a post-game press conference. And if you saw Larry, you couldn't help but smile, even in the middle of that chaos, you know?
Yeah, he'd be laughing.
He would laugh at you. He'd say, calm down, Susan, you'll make deadline. Just call your editor. He'll give you an extra couple minutes, you know? And that's what kind of person he was. He was able to put the lives around of people around him at ease. And, you know, for that, I'll just be grateful that I was able to enjoy him in my life as a professional and as a friend for as long as I did, because he's a special guy.
And a couple other things, Cam, about him. Such a smart guy, by the way. I didn't realize that he went to Wharton, University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, I guess.
Right.
And got his degree, and then got his master's, not at Wharton, at Ohio University, but it was obvious he was super smart, and you ask him something about the Orange Bowl, you know, it was always changing. He helped, you know, bring forth this whole new, you know, from the College Football Alliance or whatever it was to from the BCS era,
right,
college football playoffs, that he understood everything and how it worked. And he was just so smart. And then the other thing I wanted to say was, you were talking about the Thurman Munson situation. You know, Larry, the lead of my story, the beginning of my story, talks about the voice.
Joe Zagacki.
Yeah. But right. Joe Zagacki, who was in the hospital after a plane crash. And in that plane crash, Joe was, I think, delivering goods after the Hurricane Andrew to people.
Right.
You know, I talked to Joe, and Joe was very close with Larry. And so Joe breaks every rib, shatters his right leg and his ankle. And it's the first time Joe has not, and still to this day, the only time he has missed a game as far as broadcasting.
Right.
The 1992 opener against Iowa, at Iowa. Obviously, he had gotten out of a hospital the day before, Joe had, and all of a sudden there's a knock on his door, and it's Larry Wall. Okay, Larry Wall had just lost his house. His house got destroyed in Hurricane Andrew, destroyed, and it was less than 2 weeks later. He knocks on the door because he knew Joe was back, and says, "I'm watching the game with you," because he knew Joe would be so depressed. And I think Joe told me that he called the opening kickoff. I guess he was on the broadcast for the opening kickoff. And he said Larry was so excited about that, and they had such a good time. And he said he'll never forget that for the rest of his life. Joe will never forget that.
And if you know, when you talk to Joe Zagacki, and as you guys know, SID, the head PR person, works so closely with your play-by-play and your color commentators. And, you know, we are obviously blessed with a special pair, and Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey Jr. have been fixtures in the community for so many years. And I think for Larry to immediately think of Joe you know, to your point too, about just losing his house 12 days earlier, I'm sure there was nowhere other than at the game that Larry Wall would have rather been than with Joe Zagacki. And it's those relationships that he's capable of building,
yep,
that I think the rest of us in PR could only aspire to be. It's a selfless, thoughtful individual who puts others first. And listen, that's really a lot of the job is managing that. But the difference is in that level of commitment to it, right? Because ultimately, as you kind of talked about first, Susan, it's a behind the scenes kind of job where you're a connector of two important entities. And that might be the Miami Herald and a student athlete. That might be, you know, ESPN and the NBA, you know, the LA Lakers, whatever it might be. But for him to want to be there with Joe Zagacki for the first game that Joe Z wasn't in a booth for in however long, you know, that's the difference. The commitment is not, it's not a job. It was never a job description to Larry Wall. This is literally who he was. He's a connector of people. Yep. He is a people person to the level that I only aspire to be. And he's certainly someone whose memory I will carry with me in this profession for the rest of my life for that exact reason.
Yeah, me too. And you know, relationships is, it's all about, that's relationships. I put that at the end of the story, and that's what everybody told me, Harvey Green and Rich Dalrymple, who's the top guy now in communications and has been for years for the Dallas Cowboys. And it's very well known in sports. You know, he said he knew that life is all about relationships, and
right.
And that's, I think that's true with everybody. And that's why I think everybody in the world is writing to me and tweeting and like all different people across the country, from big time to small time to people you don't know, saying how Larry Wall touched their lives. So anyway, I really appreciate you joining us for this.
Oh, I was honored to. When you asked, Susan, it was a no brainer. You know, thank you for thinking of me. I just, I can't emphasize it enough. What a nightmarish loss for this community and his you know, the memories that all of us share of him, that electric smile of his one-liners that would brighten up any press box. They'll continue to do so. So he is, he was a special person, and you know, we'll have him in our hearts here forever.
Thanks, Cam.
Thank you, guys.
Hopefully we'll see you before too long in person.
Yes. Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you both very soon.
All right. Take care.
All right, let's wrap things up here with part one of our two-part spring football preview. We are scheduled to get started down here in South Florida, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. We're going to do this week, we'll break down the offense. Next week, we'll take a look at the defense. We've talked a lot about the defense this offseason with all the coaching changes, so I'm excited to dive in and think about the offense a little bit today. Susan, mm-hmm. I've written out five questions I'm looking forward to seeing Miami try to answer this spring. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds great.
All right. Number one on my list is, who will be Miami's quarterback of the future? I think it's an obvious number one. Quarterback is always in the spotlight. And even though it's not something that's going to affect Miami this year, it might, I guess, obviously.
Yes, it will.
The quarterback situation will be dominated by Jake Garcia and Tyler Van Dyke. And I guess Peyton Matoka also will be in the mix. You know, some of the walk-ons, but I think we all expect it to be basically a Van Dyke, Jake Garcia. I don't want to say battle because I don't think anything's going to be determined off of the spring. They're not going to come out of the spring and say, oh, Jake Garcia is our backup quarterback. I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, definitely won't. Definitely.
But, it's going to be a good way for us to get a sense of what life is going to be like after Derek King in Miami. And that is, you know, I feel pretty confident that if Derek King is healthy, Miami is going to be pretty good. But the future beyond him is one of the biggest questions surrounding this program right now. And we get like kind of a sneak peek at it in this next month or so here.
Yeah, for sure. Because we know Derek, you know, won't be in spring. That's the one thing we know for sure. No, you know, we don't know about the fall. That's the biggest question right now in this team. Will Derek King be ready for the Alabama game? It's such a massive question. I mean, you know, if he's ready, it changes everything. Not sure. And so, you know, as far as like Jake Garcia, true freshman, you know, right from high school, no matter how good he is, he's still coming right from high school. And Tyler Van Dyke, who has been with UM for a season.
Because he was an early enrollee, yeah.
A whole year, exactly. But he basically, I don't know. What did he get in one game, two games?
He was in COVID protocol a lot of the year too, right?
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, actually, exactly.
An undisclosed injury, because there was a game where he traveled and was unavailable. So,
and who knows why that was, right? So, like, injury, who knows? He had two passes and no completions. I mean, come on, that was his whole season. He really had very little experience.
Yeah, it was all about, I didn't expect him to get into a game last year. It was all about him. I mean, I expect him to get in garbage. I didn't expect him to play real snaps last year. It was all about what was he learning from the bench, and how much of a leg up will that give him on Jake Garcia is an open question.
Yeah, I guess it depends, you know, how much of the offense he's mastered. I guess that sounds like a funny question when you've been with the program for a year, but when you haven't really played, it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different game when you haven't really been out there. None of us really know him very well. I know you saw him, we said, at that.
Yeah, I met him at Paradise Camp a couple of years ago. Have we had him? I think we maybe talked to him once in the spring or something. I don't even remember. No, I guess there was no spring. I don't know if we talked to him at all this year. You're right.
I don't think we talked to him. I don't think so either.
We talked to some of the freshmen, but only guys who were playing, and obviously he was never playing.
Never. It's funny because I have no clue as to his personality. You know what I mean? Yeah. Especially quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are so key, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, Jake Garcia, who is so highly touted he's so kind of known among recruiting types and high school people all of a sudden, you know, everybody's forgotten about Tyler, you know?
Yeah.
And although Tyler played, I guess, in Connecticut and not as big.
Yeah, Tyler, you know, if you watch like what he did in high school, and again, we haven't seen him throw like at all because we don't get to see practice at all last year. But like, if you look at what he did in high school and you just look at him physically, you know, he's like, looks the part, he can make the throws. Like, he's got a really strong arm. Like, there's no reason to not think he could be good, except like you said, he played in Connecticut, and the competition level in Connecticut is a lot different than the competition level in California, where Jake Garcia spent most of his high school career, and
Georgia,
right? Where he played his senior season. So like, you know, obviously Tyler now has had a year of throwing against college defenses. So like, theoretically he's ramped up, but I think Jake is more on paper is more ready to contribute as a true freshman than Tyler was, just because of the level of competition he faced throughout his high school career.
I mean, I personally would think that too, right?
Yeah. And I think it's also, you noted the personality thing, and it's so hard to judge this with guys going from high school to college, you know, where they're the small big fish in the small pond in high school, and then they go to be the small pond or small fish in the big pond in college. But people like rave about Jake Garcia having like that magnet. I think that everyone uses the word magnetic when they talk about him. And you think about it, like, you know, he moves to Georgia. He takes over as starting quarterback, and then he transfers to Grayson, which is like a top five, top 10, top 15 program in the country. And
right
midway through the season and is able to like be their starting quarterback. Like there is a certain something that, you know, that, like I said, that jump is hard to judge how guys are going to make that transition from high school to college. But there are reasons to think he's got the personality you look for from a quarterback. All right. Next thing I have on the list is.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to. Anyway, everything you say, I agree with. I feel like I know Jake Garcia more than ever.
Yeah. Other next on the list I have, will it be more of Mark Pope and D Wiggins at wide receiver, or are there going to be some new guys to really know? You know, they had the 9 co-starters last year, obviously. So I think people like know the names of a lot of these wide receivers, even if they didn't really play. Yeah. I feel pretty confident that Mike Harley's going to be a starter. I feel like he probably will be a starter, but we just don't know. And then the question is, you know, Mark Pope and D Wiggins both have flashed at times throughout their career. Mark Pope had a couple of really good games. D Wiggins has obviously been contributing since his freshman season. But The note they left us on in that bowl game where they're dropping touchdowns, not a good one. And Miami, to me, one of the biggest questions about this offense going into next year, because I actually feel pretty good about the offense at most spots, is can some of those freshmen or younger guys, Jeremiah Payton, Xavier Restrepo, Keyshawn Smith, can someone from that group or a couple guys from that group take the leap from being depth to being guys who really push these upperclassmen? Or even will one of these, you know, they've got a pretty good group of freshman receivers coming in too.
Exactly.
Them, make the push. Or is it just going to be more Mark Pope and D Wiggins out there with Mike Harley and Charleston Rambo?
Well, I think for sure Mike Harley.
Yeah.
I think it's a brainer unless something weird happens. Yeah. And D Wiggins to me has a lot of talent, but you're right. There's been so many drops.
Yeah, they've both been streaky. I mean, and the lows have been more frequent than the highs, I would say, with both of them, which is the problem.
Yeah, and I think that these coaches, are looking for something to change. You can't just keep doing the same thing all the time. I mean, I think if some of these young guys, I think they're going to get shots. I think they're going to get their shots. I think like a Romello Brinson, right? Yeah. They talk about a lot.
The only thing is those wide receivers are not here in the spring. But yes.
Romello and Breshard Smith.
But I don't think I think you're right. I don't know if that necessarily will keep them from.
It's a skill position. I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're right in that they have to learn the routes and the depth. Because that's a big thing of learning, you know, the receivers getting a college game. They can't just like run and hope the quarterback sees them and throws it. I mean, they have to know the plays. They really do. So I don't like Romello Brinson and Breshard. I know that they're local kids. I don't know how honestly smart they are. I don't know them. I don't know if they're best learners. Whatever, but I think even though they're not here in the spring, that they're going to get, that coaches are going to give everybody a shot because these other guys have gotten their shots.
Yes.
And somebody's got to step up and I think the younger kids are going to get shots.
Yeah. To me, I'm looking at Keyshawn Smith, who to me was the guy from that group of freshmen that flashed most often, you know, felt like anytime he was in garbage time, he was like making a big catch, like a long catch. Like he was clearly a guy who could stretch the field for them.
Keyshawn Smith had 2 catches on the season.
Yeah. And they were both like pretty big. Yeah, one with a 50-yard touchdown, I think.
Almost 42 yards. You're right.
Yeah.
And Yeah. No, he didn't have any touchdowns. You know who?
Maybe it wasn't a touchdown. Michael Redding had a touchdown.
Michael Redding. But Michael Redding had 3 catches for 19 yards, but he did have a touchdown. I mean,
he was a guy who was like in the game sometimes early. Like, I remember he had a first down catch like early in a game. I was like surprised. Uh-huh. Those are the two guys to me that I think clearly seemed the most far ahead from the wide receivers, from the freshman wide receivers group last year. It's really those two and Jeremiah Payton, who has just been so quiet since he's gotten here.
It's a perfect way to describe him. I could have sworn, and I'm not the only one, that Jeremiah Payton was going to be a star by now. So yeah. I'm not sure.
So those are kind of the guys I have my eye on. And I think you're right with the freshmen that obviously are not here yet. But, like, I really like – you know, I think I'd be shocked if Breshard Smith doesn't play in some capacity next year. And it's relatively significant because they just don't have anyone like him on the roster. He's kind of like that Percy Harvin type like athlete, like wide receiver, running back, will run jet sweeps, will
right
probably be your like starting punt returner, like, and Rhett Lashley likes to have a guy like that in his offense, and he just didn't have, like, you know, he didn't have a guy like that last year. So I think he'll play in some capacity, but
Jacoby George.
He's good too. I think he's in some ways maybe the most underrated guy in this class because he played the plantation, which is like pretty good, but not like a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. He didn't play a lot of games, obviously, because of COVID last year. I think the one concern with him is he's just, you know, that I feel like Miami kind of gets a guy like that every year, and it's just whether that guy pans out. Because, you know, a little smaller guy who feels mostly like a slot guy to me, but yeah, I mean, his production as a senior was pretty crazy. So
right.
I think it's just about stacking chips at that wide receiver spot where now hopefully you've got like 10 guys and you just need a couple of them to hit. So you really get to push those veterans who have underwhelmed so far. Number 3 question I have, kind of related to the wide receivers, is can Will Mallory become a star? Obviously with Brevin Jordan gone, it is now his turn to be the top tight end. And I think that can take the biggest leap, I think, from last season to this season, just in terms of like his profile and his production.
I think the answer is yes. And he can be a star. And I mean, he had 4 touchdowns last year. He has great big, graceful to me strides.
Yep.
He's a bull. I mean, he is.
He was a good, I remember he was a good, track and field, like a good, I can't remember if he was a hurdler or like a 300 runner in high school, but I remember he was like good, like not won a state championship or anything like that, but like he was good. So like, you're right with his big grace.
He's very smart there. You could tell he's studious, very serious.
Yeah. Dad played at Michigan. Like, you know, he's been groomed for this.
And dad, dad is a special teams coach with the Jaguars. I mean, he's I think he's really good, really serious, really smart, knows his any weaknesses that he has and tries to improve it. He got bigger this year. He wanted to get his legs stronger and he did. A very, very big team player, right? He loves the team. He's not selfish. He's not a showboat. He's strong. I hope he does really well this year because he's a good kid and he's good for the team.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's a guy, you know, you think of last year, like the guys we just talked to all the time from the offense, it was like, obviously D'Eric, Mike Harley by the end of the year, and Brevin, and like I think Will Mallory can be like a face of this offense. And I think, you know, he's a guy who wouldn't surprise me if we go into the spring game and he like has a monster spring game, just because, especially with the freshmen, you know, young quarterbacks like the tight ends, like I think we're due for the Will Mallory breakout, and I think we're going to be hearing a lot about him in the spring.
Yep, agree.
Next one I've got, what is the ceiling for this offensive line? It's kind of an interesting question because, you know, the last couple of years we've gone into spring and the question has been like, who's going to start on the offensive line? Like, what is this group going to look like? All of a sudden,
it's like arguably the strength of the offense other than Derek.
It's crazy, in
the
right? Spring,
I would say it is the strength of the offense.
Is it's the absolutely crazy. It's
crazy.
It is. And they have a, come on, they have a seventh year guy. I love that. And
he's not even their best tackle. Because
I know, so
like really good by the end of the year.
Yep, right tackle Jared Williams coming back, seventh year of college football. Because as we've said and many times, every player gets a free year, a freebie, like a do-over this year because of the pandemic, because of the coronavirus. The NCAA gave a free extra year, free. We don't mean like money wise, but
yeah,
they can back for another year of eligibility. And so whatever they were before, it's kind of interesting what rosters are doing. I mean, there's going to be a lot of storylines with this. But anyway, so if you were a redshirt freshman last year,
you're a redshirt freshman all over again
this year. If you were a fourth year junior, fourth year junior. Well, guess what? You're a fourth year junior again. The stats still count from the year before, but everybody gets another year if they want to return. And given scholarships and all that, but it's going to be very tricky. We can talk a little bit about that next week too, about the scholarship situation.
It's a big boost for this Miami offensive line that again, I think it was pretty good by the end of the year. You bring back now seven guys, I think, who started a game last year. And that Jared Williams coming back just gives you like basically, obviously all five guys back from last year who started the majority of games. And that right tackle spot was going to be a question mark if Jared wasn't there. Were you going to move DJ Scaife back to right tackle? Were you going to, was one of the fresh, the guys who were freshmen last year, Jalen Rivers, Isaiah Walker going to be in the mix. Instead, now you have the question is like where, Navon Donaldson, who was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, your best offensive lineman, he has no guaranteed spot now. I would guess he starts somewhere if just based on nothing. I would think left guard where Ja'Kai Clark has been playing.
Left guard.
Ja'Kai Clark has been like fine too. Like it's the first time that Miami feels like they're not forcing guys in there. They're not like, they don't have four guys and they need to like scrape together a fifth. They've legitimately got like six starting ACC starting caliber offensive linemen for five spots, which is a really good spot to be in.
It is. And they can rotate a few guys if they get fired or whatever. But I tell you what, with their quarterback situation now, without knowing if Derek's going to be ready, no matter what they say, I'll believe that when I see it as far as it goes, because I know how far we've come with, ACL tears and things like that. And Miami has a great rehab program and they're taking very good care of him. And still, I think I've counted a couple times. It would only be something like 8 months.
Right.
Time of a surgery to that first game against Alabama, and remember 8 months to the game, but you need at least 4 weeks, right?
You need some time to practice before.
You're coming off an ACL, so I'm still very wary of that, and it's too darn bad because think how if Derek were okay, totally okay, having that O-line back.
And especially going against Alabama in the opener with Alabama losing. So, Alabama's still going to be a pretty heavy favorite, but losing so much from last year.
Alabama will be totally highly favored. Anyway, but yes, I think the offensive line ceiling is much higher. I think we both agree on that.
Yeah. All right. Last one is, will there be a breakout freshman other than Jake Garcia? Because we're going to be hearing a lot about Jake Garcia no matter what he does. And I mean the true freshman, as you know, eligibility thing is weird. where Don Chaney is technically a freshman and all these guys were really impressive last year. On the offensive side, it's kind of thin other than other than Jake Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I'm looking.
None of their skill guys. None of their skill guys are on campus. None of the three wide receivers. Yeah. Or none of the. I guess Elijah Arroyo is. He's probably the top ranked guy.
Oh, that's right. We're talking about offense. I was just going to say Leonard Taylor.
Yeah, well, there's some guys on defense that we'll talk about next week. The two guys that I'm watching out for are, I mentioned Elijah Arroyo, who I think, Miami's obviously Will Mallory is going to be the starter, and
right,
Larry Hodges and Dom Amorelli both played last year. They're probably like the favorites to be the 2 and 3 tight end in some order. But Elijah Arroyo, like, was a monster this last year in high school, and is a little Brevin-ish, like, as that, you know, a little bit smaller, but good, like, basically a wide receiver at tight end. And I think he'll push for that number two tight end spot against those two guys who, you know, they're going to get pushed this year. And then the other guy I want to mention is – Michael McLaughlin from Stoneman Douglas, 6'7", 265, right tackle. Not going to start this year, but I think he's a guy who I wouldn't be surprised if we hear from Garen Justice about how much he likes Michael McLaughlin all throughout spring.
Another O-lineman. Yep. But you're right. Looking at the list, I mean, there's just not, you know, there's three brand new offensive linemen. So there's not so many. There's the couple wide receivers we talked about. There's not a lot of them, really.
Yeah, on the offensive side, there's not a lot of the new freshmen. Jake Garcia is like probably going to be the most talked about guy in the spring, ultimately. But after him,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I guess it would be maybe what you're saying, Elijah Arroyo is supposed to be really good, but maybe though we're going to see one of those wide receivers. You gotta hope. I'm kind of hoping one of those two or three wide receivers,
mm-hmm.
who the new ones who are the breakout guys.
Yeah, yeah, that'll have to wait until else the fall, is gonna though. Be really but good. Yeah. All right, I think we can wrap things up there. We will be back next week,
of course. Yeah,
to do the second half of our preview, talking about the defense, kind of the more questions.
And we'll add some more.
Yeah, think of how often we've come on here and just like had no confidence in the offense, and it's totally flipped.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that.
All right. Thanks as always for listening to the Eye on the U podcast. You can follow Susan on Twitter at S Miller Degnan. Be sure to check out her obituary about Larry Wall. She's also got some coverage leading up to spring football. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that next week. You can follow me on Twitter at DB Wilson 2. I'm still holed up here in Lakeland, Florida for state basketball championships. We've got like six South Florida teams up here, I think. Eight if you include some of the Palm Beach County teams that we don't cover at the Herald. So could be a good week for Miami basketball, or South Florida basketball, I should say. You can follow all that at miamiherald.com. Thanks as always for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.